Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Preach What You Practice podcast with me, Josh Green. We're all about preaching what we live and getting our walk to talk. Today, we're starting a brand new series called Leadership L's, Leadership Lessons, how to take our L's, our losses, and turn them into lessons. It's going to be a great episode. I've got my mate Pete Baker to help me talk through and discuss this subject. We've got a number of guys coming on and girls over the next few weeks. It's going to be an amazing thing that we're doing. If you're listening to this podcast, please subscribe. If you're watching on YouTube, hit the like button and subscribe and hit the notification bell so that you can be notified when I drop videos. I drop videos every Tuesday at 3 o'clock. Sometimes I do spontaneous ones. But that's all good. You can follow me on Instagram. It's at Josh So Social. And finally, you can support me on Patreon to help keep this channel going and to help me to do more of these videos and to get my book out, Preach What You Practice, which is coming later this year. All the donations, all the help on Patreon really supports me. It's patreon.com/preachwhatyoupractice. And you can support me on there. There's all sorts of different tiers. You can support me for low amounts of money or bigger amounts of money, from like £3 to like £25. And you get exclusive video content just for you. You get an exclusive look at my book, which is coming up. But anyway, any help on this video, liking, commenting, subscribing, helps me massively. So let's get into it today. Leadership L's with Pete Baker. Let's go. All right. Well, here we are. The first episode of Leadership L's with my mate Pete Baker, who's here. How are you doing, mate? You good?
Very good. Yeah, beautiful Lancashire. All is good. The sun is shining.
Lancashire is where it's at. Tell us a bit about sort of you and what you do day to day.
Yeah. So my name's Pete, married to the beautiful Bryony. We've got two awesome kids. Lead the PAYS movement in the UK. PAYS is an international missionary organization, recruit, train, and place young adults to work in churches, to work in schools, to serve the community, to disciple young people so that those young people can go on and advance the kingdom of God. So that's most of my life is spent working with young adults to help them work with young people. And then we're also social leaders of our local church, Life Church in Lancashire. So yeah, very involved in pastoral work, discipleship, community work, within East Lancs.
I've worked with Pete quite a bit with their church, and also we've worked with PAYS a lot. Actually, we've worked with PAYS in Germany as well quite a bit. So,
cool.
Shout out all the Germans.
Ich liebe Deutschland.
The Germans, amazing. And I found out the other day that you're a Liverpool fan. Is this correct?
Yes, very much so, yeah. Are you City?
See, yeah, we're not happy about this now. We've got City and Liverpool. So who are you pipping for the league title this season?
Well, obviously, I've been back in Liverpool for 30 years. Every year I've been like, this year's our year. Obviously, last year was our year. If I was a neutral right now, I'd say City, because City are looking really good.
Is that just because you're on my podcast?
not at all. I remember City, when I grew up in the 80s. So I remember when City, you could like City because they were rubbish, but they were like they were likeable. Yeah. And you had great players like, you know, Kinkladze and Uwe Rosler, and I liked that City.
Well, at least you acknowledge that we have some sort of history, which is better than most fans. Well, it's great to have you on today. We're talking about sort of leadership in general. Yeah. You've been a leader for a long time in church with PAYS. Obviously, you've got kids as well, so you know what it's like to sort of lead younger people and all that good stuff. Given the current sort of political climate recently, we've seen sort of what a lot of people would say are leadership failures. Some people might say they're successful and all that kind of stuff. There seems to be a lot of leadership L's going on, people taking losses, doing things wrong. And also we live in this sort of awful cancel culture where it's sort of like you do something wrong, you're cancelled, that's it. And I feel like we sort of losing grace and losing this idea that mistakes don't have to just break you. They can sort of make you, and that we can turn our losses into lessons. Obviously, when somebody does something seriously wrong, they still have to face consequences and all that. But I was just wondering for you, maybe what your perspective might be. How do you turn losses into lessons? How do you see that sort of thing?
Well, I was worried when you used the P word there, political. I thought, where's this going? No, that's a great, that is such a great question. I probably rarely saw myself as a leader. Like certainly at the beginning of my journey, I got involved in ministry because I had a great youth leader who discipled me, invested into me. And essentially, I guess when I got involved in ministry, I got involved in leadership, in my mind, I love Jesus, I love people, I want to tell people about Jesus. And I just kept saying yes to opportunities. Do you want to lead the youth group? You know, do you want to help with the kids' work? Do you want to be part of the detached team? And just yes, yes, yes. Even joining PAYS was about, there's this opportunity to reach young people. It was a free gap year. I'm like, yeah, I'll say yes to that. And then as I'm saying yes to these opportunities growing, and if I'm honest, the first few years, I had very low expectations on myself. The first few years of ministry, everything went great. You know, I don't know if you've had seasons like that where I'm winning. I had very low expectations on myself. No one really had big expectations on me, I don't think, you know, from this small town in North Manchester, shy, quiet, like naturally very shy and quiet kind of person. And suddenly I'm just at the front of schools, thousands of young people, seeing young people come to faith, seeing young people become part of the church. This is all going great. Then at 21, I became the national leader of PAYS, and things started to go wrong, you know. And so I guess it was when I suddenly was in a position, quite high profile, within, you know, within my own world, you know, high profile, expectation, a bit of reputation, a bit of not hype, but like suddenly people know your name or people have an expectation of who you are, and realizing I don't know what I'm doing. And so probably my losses came at a point when I was more public, you know, and realizing that I'm not great at communication. I'm not great at some of this organization stuff. Just not doing a great job, and really struggling with a lot of that. And certainly when you did use the P word, you know, political, it made me think, yeah, some of the people that we do see, humility is the word that comes to my mind. There is a real lack of humility in some of our public figures, you know, people that grab hold of greatness, want greatness. They're just not marked with humility. And whenever I see them, I think of King Jesus and just the humility that he carried. And so I think that's been, a lesson for me over, humility, not taking myself too seriously. And always being a learner. I think when I entered that leadership phase of a national level in my early 20s, I probably did take myself too seriously. And probably didn't lean in enough to those that were really trying to pour into me. And I don't think I had arrogance, but I was probably more just a fear of everything going wrong, you know.
So much there. Lots of wisdom. Truth bombs. We love it. And that's the thing, really. The Bible says that God opposes the proud and exalts the humble. And you know, that idea that humility can turn our losses into lessons is often overlooked, because you sort of feel as a leader, I need to have all the answers. I need to bring the truth. I need to be God's man of power for the hour, sort of thing. And and sort of when you look at Jesus, you do see sometimes those times where he would retreat from things and sort of take that time to get himself before God, before his Father, and sort of just take that time. And just that real model of servant leadership, humble leadership, is sort of sometimes swallowing that pride and saying, I was wrong. I made a mistake. And nobody can do anything with that. Because when you're proud, I don't think it's just God that opposes you. I think people oppose you. Because, you know, we even had an example recently where I was seeing just online today, Piers Morgan's asking Matt Hancock a question, like a simple yes and no. And he can't do it because he keeps, you know, you can see the pride of, I want to do my job well. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I think sometimes it's better to go, yeah, actually, I did make a mistake, but now we're doing the right thing. And I've learned from my mistake. And I think people can go on that journey with you if you do that. But if you just sort of hold the pride position, people don't know how to do anything other than just oppose that.
Yes. Yeah. No, that's really true. And I think certainly what was true for me early in my leadership was the models of leadership, the people that inspired me the most, that I still love to this day, like platform kind of preachers and those kind of people. And then I was able to get close to some of them were like really alpha male kind of characters. And I guess they gave a position, or they gave a posture of power, authority. And I think I wanted all of that, but began to realize more and more, I'm not that, you know, I'm not this alpha male kind of personality. Like I said, you know, quiet, introvert, shy, you know, those kind of things. Maybe I wouldn't call myself shy, but as a kid, you would call me shy. And as an adult, I think you just say quiet and introvert. And at the point where I began to, things began to unravel maybe a little bit in my leadership journey, I began to then maybe equate that with my identity in God, of like, I'm not like these people that are excellent, that are smashing it. Is there something wrong with me? Is there something innately wrong with me? You know, like, am I not cut out to do this? And it was a weird season of, I'm just following Jesus. I'm just like having a go, and that's acceptable. And then suddenly it's not acceptable. You know, suddenly I'm failing. And like, how did that happen? When did that happen? When was it being nice and being a good person? It suddenly wasn't okay or wasn't good enough. But again, I think a lot of that was in my own mind as well, of I'm not this kind of person, so therefore I'm not a leader. Yeah. So that was a bit of a loss of, I'm not this kind of person. That means I can't be a leader. But that definitely became a lesson of, no, wait a minute, actually, maybe I can be a leader, but in a different mold. You know, is there a different mold of leadership? And of course, the mold for us to always go back to is King Jesus, the servant leader. You know, one of my favorite images in scripture is, I think it's in John's gospel, Jesus knows that all authority is in his hand, and he gets up from the table, which I just love that picture, and he takes off his robe and he washes his disciples' feet. You know, so at the point where he knows that all authority has been given to him from the Father, and you almost can imagine power trip moment, what does he do? He takes off his outer garment, kneels down and washes his disciples' feet. So yeah, servant leader, the humility of King Jesus, that's the model. And I'm certainly not saying Jesus is like me, you know, because that's a mistake, isn't it, we can make as well. But that helped. And I think meeting people over the years that are like, well, these are great leaders. And you can be a great leader and be an alpha male, of course. Now that's, I guess, like the type A leadership, choleric, strong, authority, all that kind of. So I love that kind of leader. I just began to realize I'm not that kind of leader, but I can still be a leader. So that was one of my, I guess, losses that became a lesson. Who has God made me to be? You know, who has God called me to be?
We're all leaders in some way, shape, or form. And John Maxwell says that leadership is influence. Is
yes,
the influence. So we can all have an influence, whether that influence is positive or negative, is sort of beside the point.
Yeah.
We can all have an influence. And so you sort of touched on, you know, identity being a real thing. So how do you handle being wrong as a leader? Well, you sort of start to realize maybe my identity is too wrapped up in it. Sometimes I have to step out of that and look at Jesus. And you sort of also touched on this premise that I'm working from, which is that leaders are learners.
Yes.
Because I was talking to some of my friends the other day, and when I was growing up in the leadership spheres that I was growing up in, starting to take more of an international platform, and things were sort of blowing up for us a little bit. I remember somebody sort of saying to me, oh, well, you have to be a prince before you're a king. And I was sort of like, I kind of sort of understood the heart behind it, how, you know, you have to start somewhere and build your way up. But I think also it's a little bit warped, this idea that you serve and you stay low. And then when you get that leadership position, now you're a king, and now you don't involve yourself in those princely activities. And that, again, as you just described, is not the model of leadership that Jesus laid out. It was sort of, I serve, and as God promotes me, I carry on serving. And, you know, even at the pinnacle of Jesus' ministry, that's when he washed the disciples' feet. You know what I mean? It wasn't like at the beginning and then he's just all miracles. So I just wonder, how do you make sure, how do you guard your heart against that sort of pride? How do you guard your heart to make sure that you are a leader who learns? Because obviously a disciple is a disciplined learner. You know, how do you make sure that you don't get so wrapped up in sort of leadership that you forget that we're followers ultimately?
I think that's really brilliant. I was talking to a friend recently and we were talking about someone else in our world, and she was saying that it's really important to be mentored by someone who can't give you a leg up, you know. So sometimes you just have investment from someone because of what you can get from them, you know, because they might be able to propel you to the next level or whatever. But yeah, and I love this idea. You know, Bob Goff talks about this idea of let everyone be your teacher. So I know as a parent, as a father, I know one of the mistakes as a preacher who's a father is that every illustration is about your kids. And you've probably done that. I've certainly done that. But I definitely know they teach me a lot. My children teach me so much in every different stage. And a bit like we were saying before about humility, realizing sometimes I've got things wrong. I remember one really specific episode where I was in the wrong. My daughter, my oldest daughter, who was probably about 6 or 7 at the time, was in the right. And she was like telling me off, not angrily. She was just very clear. And I remember sitting down, she was like at the top of the stairs. I was halfway up the stairs. And I think just that little moment of, I'm not going to fight this. I submitted myself. I sat down halfway up the stairs. I took the posture of submission and I thought, she's right, I'm wrong. I need to learn from her in this moment. So I guess there's something there of posture, submission, listening, you know, listening well, letting everyone be your teacher. Remember years ago, I had this phrase of anybody can speak to me, but not everyone can speak into me. So I thought that was important. Like, I want everyone to be I want to be able to learn from anybody. I want to be able to engage with anybody, but that doesn't mean I take on everything that everybody says. You know, everyone can speak to me, but not everyone will speak into me. I do filter. But, you know, I love that idea of there are really wise, learned people that I learn from, that I sit under. You know, Paul Gibbs has been my mentor for, must be 15, 16 years now. When I was 21, he was leading Pace. I was learning to lead Pace with him. I've spoke to Paul Gibbs this week multiple times. So he now lives in America. I live in the UK. So I've been involved in his life for many years. So he's still a mentor to me. My youth leader, when I was 12 years old, he still speaks into my life now. And our lives have gone in different directions, but he's in church leadership. I'm in church leadership and he still speaks into my life. And lots of people speak into my life in that way. And I think, again, being open, but also having a filter, I guess. You know, like not everybody, I'm not going to be like taken by every blow of the wind, you know, but I'm going to, I'm going to choose who invests into me. But I'm also going to be open. Maybe this person is going to be my teacher, you know, this child, you know, this person who's maybe an unexpected teacher. I remember when I was in Manchester, there's a guy in our church called Jack who had one of those motor vehicle things. Forgot what they're called. Most of our church were young adults or young people, but he would come disabled, either on walking sticks or on this vehicle. Whenever he came to church, and we didn't have a disabled access in those days, so we had to kind of carry him up the steps and then carry his vehicle up the steps. It was amazing how people would disappear when they saw Jack coming, because they knew either they're going to have to carry him up the steps or carry his vehicle up the steps. But I learned a lot from Jack, you know, and I learned a lot from people who would spend time with Jack. I almost felt like Jack was a gift to our church, because we're all so busy, trying to be excellent and trying to be professional and trying to be contemporary. But who was just going to listen to Jack's stories? You know, who was going to spend time with Jack? he was going to notice Jack. So yeah, everyone can be our, I love the idea that everyone can be our teacher. I think it's a very Bob Goff idea. And yeah, leaders are learners. Not everyone's academic. I get that. I love reading. You know, I just read a Pete Hughes book. I'm reading an Amy Orr Ewing book and a Pete Gregg book at the moment. So I've got a few books on the go. So I love that idea. But obviously podcasts, and this is a great podcast, by the way. But podcasts and all that, there's so much material in around. There's so much content out there. But just listening to people as well, listening to people's stories, and how we've celebrated and honoured particularly the elder generation, the Captain Toms of this world. You know, Jack would be in that category of the Captain Toms of this world. People who've lived a life well. Maybe we just need to sit down and listen a bit more to people who've lived well, and rather than discounting people because they don't appear like they can contribute much, or they've not written a book, or they're not famous, or whatever. So yeah, I love that idea. Leaders are learners, and leaning into that.
That's so good. So I just, two more things I just wanted to touch on just as we finish.
Yeah.
This question is from my wife. She's got a lot of them. So she sort of said, oh, you should ask the guys, how do you balance being a leader and being likable?
Great question, yeah. Because most of us like being liked, don't we? Most of us want to be liked. And I guess even our culture, like social media, is created to get a like. You know, you post something so somebody likes it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I'm a nice person. You know, I want people to like me. But no, I think over the years, Paul gives us this great phrase of you never put a program before a person. So like people matter more. But you never just put our person in front of all the people. So, you know, sometimes we're willing, you know, to sacrifice all the people just to make one person happy. You know, sometimes we have a loud complainer in our community or whatever. So sometimes, and I've been guilty of this, of putting too much time and too much energy chasing after somebody who's got a lot of demands. And I just want to be nice. I just want to help them. So maybe there is either an unhealthy route to that, or maybe there's a healthy route to that. I just want to help this person. But maybe I've ignored lots of people who are not shouting, who are not demanding. I've ignored them. I've ignored the rest of the people because I'm doing so much for this one person. So I don't know if I'm honest, like conviction, you know, is this the right thing? Am I doing this? Am I sweeping things under the rug? Am I ignoring the issue? Or I know I have to confront this person, and I can do it in love. I can do it in kindness. You know, conflict doesn't have to be nasty. You know, conflict and disagreement doesn't have to be. I think Bill Hybels has this phrase of having conflict without drawing blood. You know, you can have a disagreement. We can have different perspectives without drawing blood. You know, without it being a bloodbath or nasty. So I think over the years I've learned to be tougher or stronger and base decisions on conviction without being unkind.
And I think that's what we preach, what you practice. That's a little bit of what I'm getting at a little bit, is sort of, you know, if it's not preaching what you practice, you fall it very easily into that trap of being likable. So preaching the cool thing, preaching what people want to hear, preaching what's going to get you an amen. Instead, what it's all about is practicing first, living it first. You're often not seen, so you become less likable because you're too busy focus on living it out rather than speaking it out, telling everyone what you're doing, telling everyone how good you are. And sort of Jesus said, you know, don't let your right hand know what your left hand's doing. Or is it the other way around? I can't remember. But final question. Everything you've been saying is so good. There's so much wisdom here. So if you're watching, drop a comment below what your favorite bar is, because I've just started a new thing called Bar of the Week, where we take a little quote from the session that's our favorite bar. And so I'm looking forward to picking somebody else's words instead of having to try and stay humble, but also pick my own favorite thing I said. How narcissistic. But the final thing, how do you know whether you're meant to sort of sustain something, stay where you are, or take a risk to grow it? Because I think sometimes as a leader, you do have to make really difficult decisions especially church leadership, organizational leadership. You know, sometimes sustaining something, you can become comfortable, but sometimes it's the wise decision to not take the risk and just, you know, sustain. And then other mm-hmm. times it's, you know, you might think, should I take a risk? But actually sometimes a risk can end up ruining a good thing. Mm-hmm. And so the question is, how do you balance between whether it's a time to sustain or a time to risk?
That's a great question. That's a really great question. And I know the pandemic is a really unusual, odd circumstance, but certainly as Pays during the pandemic, the goal was sustain. The goal was let's keep people together. Let's keep people going. And the same for our local church. How do we keep people together? How do we keep people on board? I remember hearing this thing a few years ago, that churches that grow fast are asking the question, why, vision, keeping that front and center. And then churches that plateau have kind of got to a stage of, we know why we exist, but they stop asking that question. So I don't know if it really answers the question sustain or risk, but I think keeping vision front and center helps. So sometimes either experience or just a situation makes you say, we just need to keep on going. We need to keep people together. But constantly or regularly, maybe is a better word, coming back to the why. Why do we exist? Why do we do? And that's always going to propel you to take a risk, or always going to propel you to go for more. Like if the vision is, we want to see people come to know Jesus, we want to help people grow, we want to see more disciples, that is inevitably going to make you say, okay, look around and say, this isn't enough. We need to do more. So I guess if you do keep the vision front and center, it's more likely that you're going to take risks. But yeah, you're right. If you're just constantly changing things, constantly throwing things out and introducing new ideas, we will lose people, you know. So like, I definitely don't want to be someone who's, it's always another thing, another program, another initiative. Like that can be draining for people. So there is definitely a lot to be said of keeping people with you, keeping people on the journey. But yeah, for me, I guess that's what it made me think of, was just keeping vision and vision kind of questions. Why do we do what we do? What is God saying? How is this helping people find home? How is this helping people find hope? I think, yeah, keeping the vision front and center helps.
No, I love that, because obviously I worked for Andy Hawthorne for a long time. He was an exceptional leader. And he talk all the time about keeping the center hot. Keep the center hot. Evangelism, prayer. That's what we're all about. We're all about evangelism and prayer. You've got to do it in your own life. You've got to do it in your own church. And that's what we do here. And he was always such a vision guy.
Yes.
Quite often be risks and new programs and, you know, new initiatives, but the vision, as long as it sat with the vision, if it was something outside of the vision, that initiative's just not coming to the table.
Yeah, exactly. If I'm honest, as I was saying it, I was thinking, this sounds like Andy Hawthorne. So yeah, you're right.
That's exactly what I can imagine him now in my head. It's all about the vision. My Andy Hawthorne.
Rubber dub dub, 3 minutes and it's up.
Oh, we could do Andy Hawthorne impressions for a long time. And it just one more thing, it just made me think of Rich Wilkerson Jr., who leads VU Church in Miami. He sort of says he does these three tests where he, if he knows whether to sustain or to risk, he sort of has his head, his heart, and his gut. And if he gets two out of the three, then he knows to go for it. So if it logically makes sense in his head and his heart, like he's all in with it, but his gut, he's not quite sure, like he'll go for it, just in that two out of the three. But really, I think you're right. I think it comes down to vision, because the Bible says where there's no vision, the people perish.
Yes.
And also, when you stay in a comfortable place, sometimes you can get a little bit itchy because you're like, oh, let's just sustain. But that's all right for about a week. And then you're like, yeah, but what should we be doing? And you've got to then come back to the why. Why am I doing it? And then in the same notion, when you risk, and you start to get worried about whether there's not enough finances or what people are going to think, you come back to the why again. You're like, yeah, but we're doing it because of this reason, and that's what's going to keep us going. So thanks so much, Pete.
Thank you.
So many amazing things. Thanks for jumping on today. And I'm going to be recording another podcast with Pete's friend, Dan. So it's so good to have you with us today. And yeah, if you're watching for the first time, give this video a subscribe, like, comment if you're new, and make sure you check out Pays. I'll put some links in the description. They've always got loads of amazing things happening, leadership training and schools and ways that you can go out on mission and change the world. So thanks for tuning in today. See you next week for another episode.